Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today we have a very special episode. We're going to be working towards what we've discussed throughout the year. Coaching, great aspects of coaching, and what makes a person, in our opinion, a great coach. And we're going to point one out specifically. Good friends of mine, colleagues, people I've known for years have joined us today. A couple newcomers to the podcast. I'd like to welcome current high school coach and friend, Pat Carroll. How are you doing today, coach?
Good, Eli. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Might have the same last name, but a little bit of a different guy. Johnny Carroll, who used to be a Division I football player and high school coach. How you doing, Johnny?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Returning back to the podcast, Dietrich Riley, former UCLA football player. Good friend of the podcast. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Feels good to be back.
Yeah, it's nice to see you, my friend. And then today, our producer has been kind enough, former high school football coach and great guy, Gabriel Halleck. How are you doing today, Gabe?
I think I'm going to retire after hearing that intro with you saying great guy. I'm doing pretty great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you might want to make that part of the loop for your phone now. Definitely.
It's going to be your ringtone.
Yeah, it sounds good to me. Yeah, because I'll never say it again, I promise. Anyway, listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. This might get a little sentimental for a few of us because we're going to go down memory lane and talk about a guy that we really admire. We're going to start talking about some of the attributes, let's say as a player. So I'm going to actually go to Johnny, young man on the totem pole here, about some of the attributes you believe make a great coach and help a person along in their development.
Ooh, I think that one of the most important things is, one, that they truly care about you and your future. I think that that one's a huge one. Going from high school to college, I definitely noticed that there's certain coaches that I would say that all they care about is winning, but there's another aspect of development and being able to grow into a man. I would also say that I think someone that knows the X's and O's, but more so think that it's important that they build a culture. I think it's just not only for the one player, but also for the team aspect. That's really important. And that's one of the most important things that I've been around from St. Francis, that was one of the key things that Coach Bonds did.
Definitely some great points. And we're going to be talking specifically about someone we all dearly think of and call JB. And we'll get to talking about Coach Bonds quite a bit today. I love the comment about building a culture. Also, caring about your, not just athlete, but your student athlete. You mentioned St. Francis. Obviously, we've said this a ton of times. Everybody here has a tie-in, whether as a coach, a former coach, athlete, former athlete, current athletic trainer for several years. We all have a deep admiration for that place. And even Johnny's wearing an up-to-date hat of the athletic department. I love it. What about you, Coach Pat Carroll? Some of the things, I mean, you're a coach, in your opinion, what makes a good colleague?
Well, I think at the top, you need a good leader, you know, someone who's able to inspire and motivate players you know, the high school level, it's important to distinguish from college or pro. At college, everybody's good. Certainly in the pros, everyone's excellent. But at college, everybody's a really good player. Even the walk-ons are former great high school players. And at the high school level, you know, you might have one or two or three, if you're lucky, great players and some good players. Then you have a bunch of guys that are, you know, not so good, but there to be part of it. But those are the guys that you need to lead and inspire and motivate so they can learn how to play better, learn the system, learn the scheme, and perform at a high level in order to have success as a team. You know, I agree with John. You need to be able to set a vision and a culture and a winning mentality. But a lot of it is, you know, how do you draw the best out of every guy, whether it's someone like Dietrich or John who played at extremely high levels? They didn't need much motivation, but it's the other guys that might need to be pushed. They might need to be taught a little bit different. They might need a little bit more patience and understanding to get the most out of their, in some cases, limited skill set. And I don't mean limited in a bad way. It's just the way the world works. But that's the beauty of high school football, is we have 50-something kids all at different levels, and it's trying to get them all to perform as 11 on the field. And you know, the old adage is football is the greatest team sport. It's the only one with 11 players going at one time, and that's what makes it so beautiful.
And I see D. Riley with his Bruins hat on nodding, so love you to add on to that.
Absolutely. I would say number one is leadership. What I mean by that is, obviously, you want to execute and be able to draw up the X's and O's, as John alluded to, on the field, but also leadership to help captivate these young athletes on and off the field. You want to be able to steer them in the right direction, because there are some athletes that maybe don't have father figure around. Maybe this the sport may be new to them. So you want to be able to be surrounded by someone that could just lead you in the right direction and be able to foster and help enhance a positive environment. You know, the sport is starting to change, not only in football, but in other sports as well, because you have to be able to deal with all different traits and personalities amongst these athletes. But you have to be able to motivate and be able to, you know, get something out of them and help them. You know, you want to make it a positive environment and just be able to create this experience, because this is something that, you know, a lot of these kids are going to be able to like hang on to and be able to create these elements and take further in life outside of sports.
And I think that's the key of really being able to take what you learn on the field, because as we all know, not everybody makes the bigs, not everybody makes Division I, Division II, even NAIA. But you take these tools that you learned, these little tricks, these little pearls of wisdom from your coaches, and you apply them to life. And it could be in your job, it could be dealing with your family, it could be helping others. A lot of what is taught by a coach, as Pat said, Coach Carroll said, it's not just 11 men. There are 11 men becoming one on the football field. And it's the same mentality. And you take that into life and you create teams that you can work with, deal with, help each other become better. And if you have that as a coach, what a solid foundation. We aren't all as fortunate when we pull the cards for parents. You know, we don't always have that great dad, that great mom, but you always have a shot at getting a great coach. And if you do, he can be that father figure. She can be that mother figure, helping you develop in ways that maybe a relative can't. We see it all the time at our school, on our campus, the young men that come back 5, 10, 15 years later, and how they developed under the tutelage of Coach Carroll or the man we're going to talk about tonight, Coach Bonds. And I know the two athletes in front of me definitely became better people, not just athletes, but better people under Coach. Gabe, please, I know you're chomping at the bit to chime in.
Thank you, Eli. And it's a tough one and an easy one. When I think of a coach, I'm going to keep my comments on the coaches that I had when I was in high school to myself, but I didn't know what a good coach was, what a quality coach was, until I got on staff at St. Francis in La Cañada. And that's just the God's honest truth. When I walked onto that field and I met Jimmy for the first time, and then I met Gibbo, and you know, Pat was there. He was the tight ends coach at the time. And they put me on freshman with the D line. mean, it was like walking into, it was like walking into a little high school nirvana for football, and not just for football, for everything. There was a focus on lifting up young student athletes. It was an all boys school, so they were lifting up young men. They were preparing them for the next stage of their life. And it just happened to be through football. You know, the life lessons that they taught, integrity was preached. I'm not going to say that wins mattered more than losses, but to be able to be a part of a coaching staff for as long as I was, and I think it was about 14 years, I was on staff at St. Francis, and I loved every month. Oh my gosh. I love that. I love those 14 years. But to be a part of an institution that focused on building the character of the student athlete was just phenomenal. And I swear to gosh, I wish other institutions emulated that. I mean, some say they can, but it's, you know, it's from the top down. And football wise, it all started with Jimmy. And I'll never forget that.
We keep talking about St. Francis, and their mantra really is, St. Francis has remained committed to enriching the mind and heart, strengthening respect through service and humility, creating a brotherhood, and envisioning men of virtue and peace. That's the mantra for the school. That's the school motto. It's a fantastic thing to say, but to be able to do it. And I see Pat wants to say something. Please, man, jump in right now.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I love Jimmy used to say, and this is, I mean, it's, you know, Jimmy said it, but I'm sure it's reflective of a lot of coaches, but he wanted to make football every student's best experience at St. Francis. He thought not narrowly about football, have a great season, have be part of a team. He thought he wanted, you mentioned Eli, guys come back 5, 10, 15 years later. Dietrich's probably 15 years out now. And I'm sure things back fondly about St. Francis. And it's one of the things I would hope, I would guess he'd say, it was the best part of my high school experience. And Jimmy really worked hard to foster that. He embraced the school values and cultures, but he really did his best to kind of make that football ecosystem so much, not just about football, but about brotherhood and about team and having fun as you know, as best as possible, but creating a culture where the guys come back and they'll, you know, when they're my age, or your age, Eli, you think back and how wonderful being part of the team at St. Francis was.
Now to kind of, let's cruise into who we're talking about now. For when I get choked up, I apologize. It's going to happen once or twice, and I'm sure a few of us will. The big guy we're talking about today, and probably my favorite football coach of all time, sorry, my brother Gabe, is definitely Jim Bonds. Jim Bonds was born 1969, if I remember correctly. He was a year older than me. We actually met as kids. He was a baseball player at Sylmar Independent Baseball League and one of two pitchers in our league that everybody was afraid to get in the batter box to, A, because he was fast, and B, if he didn't like you, he made sure he was wild. And I remember a couple bruises that lasted for weeks off of his fastball. Boy, he could throw. And he was in Sylmar for just a small part of his early life. And then my dad and his father were good friends. And that's what makes this really personal. For a while, Jimmy would be given a ride by my dad after he moved to this godforsaken town called Santa Clarita, where I reside now. I just remember getting in the car with Pops going, "We're going where? And why is Jimmy with us?" "Oh, he needs a ride to baseball practice." "Dad, baseball practice is about 10 minutes back. Where the hell are we going? Where is Santa Newhall? What the hell is that? There's a desert." And then, "Okay, Jimmy, we'll see you later. See you next time. All right, buddy, see you next week." I'm like, "Wait, I don't have to go up against his fastball anymore? Oh, thank God." I was just ecstatic. And then to watch him grow into the football player he was, as we all know, he went to William S. Hart High School, where he won a CIF title. He went on to UCLA, where he played for 4 years. Unfortunately, stepped right into a couple guys we know. One is Tommy Maddox, and then there's another one, I believe his name is Troy Aikman. And he was wedged right in between those guys. And they had some incredible experiences. He got on the field. I remember watching him play at the Rose Bowl, throwing a touchdown. I block out any other thing he threw. It was fantastic watching somebody I knew growing up succeeding. And then after everything, he's playing baseball. He played baseball and football both at UCLA. Two sport athlete. You can't say that often. Then he comes back and starts teaching at St. Francis High School in, I believe it was 1992, if I remember correctly. Full-time teacher. And just like Coach Carroll said, it wasn't just about football. It was about the experience. Even as an assistant coach, he wanted to bring John Carroll in and make sure that it didn't matter if your older brother was on the team, if your dad was around the program, it didn't matter that he knew you since you were, geez, 3 foot tall. He wanted you to experience something you'd never forget. So, Johnny, tell me about Coach.
Oh, man. I mean, like you said, I had the fortunate ability to be able to grow up with him. I kind of thought of him as a second dad. He was over here on weekends all the time hanging out with us. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to hang out with his son, James, and his daughter, Katie Bonds, as well. But other than that, I mean, as a coach, it's amazing. I think about even just going to that program when I was a ball boy. And I think that was around maybe third grade, fourth grade. And even back then, it was just a thrill, and I couldn't wait to get there.
Totally remember that. You running around as a little guy with the ball, all excited.
Yeah. Big, huge jersey on that went down to your knees.
Yep, I totally remember that.
It was crazy. And then to be able to go to that school and play for him, I mean, he was just a one-of-a-kind person that he had such a big heart. He loved you. Like I said, he cared about you. He cared about your ability to grow into a man. He taught you life lessons. He was just a one-of-a-kind guy with such a big heart. And I loved, too, one of his best features, too, was his laugh. Whenever he laughed, it was just made everyone around him laugh.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. John, I didn't really know how respected Jimmy was outside of our little bubble at St. Francis until I got brought up to the varsity staff to run the scouting and the video. I'd have to go to the schools that we would play on away games before and find out who to talk to set up my gear, you know, the end zone tripod and all that stuff in the sideline. And to have the opposing head coach start waxing poetic about all of the qualities that Jimmy had, you know, his integrity, how, you know, how great he was as a coach, as a person, how prepared his teams were. Even though the talent level was different, they knew every time St. Francis walked onto the football field, they were going to get a game. Even if they had people that were going to Alabama and Arkansas and USC and all of these other D1 schools, they knew it was going to go right up to the end because of Jimmy and our staff, and our kids were going to be prepared. I loved it.
He was the kind of guy, and I think Coach Carroll said, it didn't matter if you had the best players, the good, the top 3% in the state. He coached you up, and he would make you better. He made you believe in yourself and the kid right next to you. Even if he was a cocky freshman that jaunted onto the field thinking, oh, I got this. I'm not pointing at D. Riley right now, but I mean, I remember him jogging out to the field like, oh, this is nothing. I got this. And then he gets a whacked once or twice, and we kindly help him up. And Coach Bonds at some point brushes him off and says, that's okay, son, let's go. He had to be something special to you, D. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd just love to hear about your relationship with JB.
Absolutely. It was one of those that I, you know, still cherish and really hold on tightly still to this day. Like I said, father figure is number one that I always looked at him as, because I really didn't have any motivational factors terms of a family tree of those that went to St. Francis. So that was my dream school. Well, there was no other people that were in my ear about going there. So when I had the chance to meet him and his staff at a local football camp in at Victory Park in the summer going into my eighth grade year, just the way he embraced me and just was able to just welcome me in, you know, with open arms and stuff, how attentive he was. Like, he just wanted to get to know me as the person. And then, of course, talk football and stuff like that. And then just being able to go onto the campus furthermore, just to be able to create a, you know, a relationship. And it was incredible. He really, the moment I stepped foot on campus, there was no change of behavior. He continued to, like, always, you know, welcome me in and would always ask how I'm doing and how I'm always, you know, in the right space mentally. Because it was, you know, it was a big culture shock for me and going to St. Francis in terms of, you know, being on the campus, you know, as a 14-year-old. As far as that, you know, Coach Bonds, he was, like I said, he challenged everyone in our own ways. He, at the same time, he wasn't attacking you. He was always, you know, he wanted to get the best out of you. And that was one thing about you as a player, you didn't want to disappoint him because you could see how much he cared about us as young men. Like I said, it was just a lot of fond memories that we had. And it made you work even harder because you want to make him proud.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Pat. This goes to Dietrich's comment. It didn't matter if you were the number one player on the team. You could be sixth, seventh in line to get into that position. And he made, and I saw it, he made that kid feel important, no matter what number you would.
Yeah, exactly right. That was kind of his mantra. And that's why the young men played hard for him. And years later, still have so much respect and admiration for him. You know, Jimmy was at his heart one of the kindest men that I ever knew in my life. He was a great guy for all the reasons you've ever met him. He was really had a kind heart. He is a wonderful soul, and that came through in the way he dealt with kids. And you know, he had an adage he'd start of every season. He'd talk to the coaches, and one of the things he'd say to us is, never let a kid go home after practice if you've got on him hard. He wanted to make sure that each player knew that you loved him, that you were coaching him, that, you know, you didn't think badly of him. And he said, never let him walk through that gate thinking that he screwed up or that you're down on him or mad at him. And that was actually something I never thought of until he said it, but it's, you know, good. We get on kids pretty good. You hear Eli out of practice.
No idea what you're talking about. But
They have to know it's not personal, and coaching should never be personal. Never make it personal. Even when you're getting on them, you know, kids don't always understand that. So make them understand that why you're doing it, you're trying to make them better. Holding them accountable is a good thing, not a bad thing. And to walk through the gate and go home and not worry about what coach said to me at the time.
I think that's fantastic because that's not in the culture today. We keep saying the word love. I mean, there was no doubt in our mind. Not only did he love football, but he loved the kids that played football, not for him, but with him. He saw it as they were one big team. You and the staff, the kids on the field, they were the pieces to the puzzle that got to play the sport that he loved oh so much. Did he get fired up? Oh, geez, I don't know how many times he almost got flagged on the sideline, being out, 15, 20 yards onto the field, screaming at a ref. There's some great pictures of that too. I think we've all seen them before. Mm-hmm. And it was just part of the game. He got fired up like he was still playing, but it's because he wanted, in my opinion, to watch those young men succeed. Yeah. And whether it came down to wins or losses, let's not joke. He preferred the win, but he wanted to make sure they got something more than just a win and loss out of that, which you just don't see much anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. John, question for you, whether it was younger times or older times, can you share a funny little story, something that sticks out in your mind, whatever that is, about Coach Bonds?
Well, I don't know if this is a funny one, but it's one that I always kind of remember when I was young ball boy, and that's who Dietrich was playing there at the time. I think I was talking to Dietrich or something because, you know, I looked up to Dietrich when he was on team and growing up. So I think I was talking to him at the time. And then I was the ball boy at the time. So then they needed a ball or something, the ref, and I wasn't able to get it to him in time. And next thing you
Uh-oh.
know, I'm getting absolutely yelled at by Coach Bonds. I mean, absolutely berated. Like, he is my father. And the funny part is, the next thing you know is I forget. I don't know if I forget, if I don't remember if I continue that game, but the next game for sure, I was sitting up in the stands just staring at him like, let's go. You want to do that? Don't yell at me.
I heard about that. I heard I'm not going to St. Francis anymore. He
Yeah,
yelled at me. I
that.
I've heard this from your brother from Crunch.
Oh,
That's kind of
man.
funny.
Yeah, that exact story.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Oh, what about you, Pat? What do you what's something that stands out in your mind?
Oh, I got something. I'm blessed. I spent more time with Jim off the field than I did on. So when I think back, now that I'm in season, I think a lot about the kind of on the field stuff. But I've been blessed to travel with Jim and hang out and do lots of stuff outside. I can't think of anything that comes to mind that is notable. Just thinking about that story John just said, I think Dietrich at the time wasn't playing. He was hurt, if I remember it right. And then John was hanging out with Dietrich when he got screamed at and sent to the bench. I'll never forget another moment. We are in the middle of the game, and I'm up top in the press box, and Jim's trying to get John's attention during the game, and he yells out, "Dubert," tells him some different direction that he wanted to do, but he didn't want the other team to know, so he didn't yell five or Carol or John. He yelled out the nickname. That was something that I think about and laugh about. We had many funny Vegas stories that I'll share. I won't share
Probably not appropriate on
for
the
this.
podcast, but I'd love to hear them at practice maybe tomorrow.
It's
Oh,
hard. It's
man.
hard, Eli. I think about Jim, and my kind of heart starts to sink. He's
Yeah.
was such a close friend and mentor in many ways, even though he's a little bit younger. I admired the way that he was able to connect with kids, and like I said earlier, I admired his what a kind soul he was. He mattered. He wanted to make sure everybody mattered, and I think that's a pretty awesome thing to have people remember you for.
Yeah, I would hope to be remembered as fondly as him. I think he's a little more liked than I ever will be. So,
Yeah, Gabe said it, and I agree. Wherever we go for games, you could see the respect that folks had for Jimmy. But it wasn't because he was a high school or college star, anything at heart at UCLA. I think it's just his reputation, over the 20 something years he coached at St. Francis and Alameda, then back at St. Francis, kind of grew in the Southern California area. But everyone that you met, I coached youth baseball with Jimmy. That's how I met him back in 2002. And even watching him come from spring football at the complex off 210 when they were redoing the field years ago
remember that well.
to Heart Baseball, where Crunch and James played together, but watching him deal with 6 and 7 year olds, that was pretty awesome too, to see this the switch between the high school and the young kids. But he was a natural, whether you're a young man or young man in high school or a college level athlete. People just flocked to him. They wanted to be around him. And that's why, guys, I see Dietrich back at games and John comes back, and we have the best of our players and the guys that weren't the best, but they were still just as important to Jimmy. And that's such an incredible trait for Jimmy, and something that, he'll be in everyone's hearts and minds forever.
Yeah, and we see it at football games still. All these guys that come back and
Yeah.
start asking and talking and reminiscing, and it blows me away. It blows my colleagues away when they play against us. How many alums show up? To me, that's a statement on what he built in the 20 some odd 20 years as a head coach, and I believe 3 or 4 as an assistant coach before that. And then he skipped and went to, unfortunately, my alma mater for a few years. But then he came back home. So that was good. Dietrich, please share something with us, if you would.
Absolutely. Many stories. And it's literally, on the field, I'll share off the field as well, but just on the field, I'll just never forget like practice habits. Like, he was just always on you. He was very meticulous. He was just a perfectionist. You know, the way you would come out, he wanted everyone to look the same, just, you know, not having black socks. When it was a uniform you had to abide by, just, you know, like I said, establishing a culture. How he prepared, how he went about it, like, he was really a perfectionist. It was something I've never seen before. Like, I never knew that it so much went behind in creating a game plan. Like, we'll come in on Mondays, of course, lift, condition, and then we're reading scout reports. I'm looking at just, like, you know, the roster, thinking that's all we're going to, like, know, you know, the depth chart and stuff of us.
Yeah, no, that's it. Sorry.
Full analysis of, you know, our opponents and things like that. So just like, so when I was able to make that transition to the next level, it was a piece of cake, because I'm like, I was able to develop these habits at an early age. But I will never forget, it was one of these, it was a fall camp practice, and I came out, it was, you know, scorching hot practice during our two-a-day, and I remember I just thought I was trying to be fashionable, and I'll never forget, I had on a white bandana, and he saw it hanging on the back of my helmet, and he snatched me out of the backfield and said, give me a real running back who doesn't wear a effing bandana, who's gonna look. He just gave me that look, and he gave you that underbite look, and his face would turn red, and he was just kind of like, and the way he would just look at you, it was just terrifying. Another fun story, man, I'll never forget my first time going out to hang out with him going into my freshman year of college. This is after I graduated, you know, being able to spend some time with him out in Newport. And that was my first time ever experiencing that. He's always invite me out, come out to Newport, come out, hang out with the family, just, you know, and just being able to share that moment with him and the family, man. And it was incredible. But many, like I said, it's just too many memories to share. But yeah, man, he was one of a kind.
So many memories, and yeah, not all that we can share on the podcast, which I agree. Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown. Just real quick, I want to give a little nod to his family. Trisha, his wife, Katie, his youngest daughter, and Junior, as we all know, or as I know him, I've known him forever. You know, we love them like family. When they're able to come out, it's like having family back home at a football game. And who can forget Trisha on the sideline? She was definitely a head coach's wife, because it was hard to say who was more irritated when a hold was called on the offensive lineman, Trish or Coach Bonds himself. And there were quite a few times I thought Trish was going to get a penalty flag thrown on her. And Pat chuckles because we both witnessed that. Two stories that I love about JB. I think about him all the time. And I said this earlier, once a week, I probably look up at heaven and curse at him, because he was supposed to be the coach I ended my career with at some point. But we were getting into it in a game, and it was a big game. It was an important game in the middle of the league. And we had somebody get hurt, and it was an important player. And as the athletic trainer, not all athletic trainers see eye to eye with the coaching staff. And well, yeah, thanks, guys. You're all nodding. I appreciate that. Yeah, geez, thanks. I see how it is. All right, E2 Brute. We sit there and we try to deal with the coaches and the best we can, and kick gloves and put it in a little sugar coating. But in a nutshell, sorry, coach, he's done for the day. And I remember him turning. And it's the third or fourth quarter. He's what? And then I can't quite reiterate everything he said to me on this podcast today, because I'd be paying $5, because it's $5 per curse word. I'd be paying it many times over right now.
I know what he said. You got to be me.
I believe that was the comment.
That's exactly what he said.
I believe that's the comment. And then afterwards, he just kept yelling. And I looked at him. I'm like, Coach. And I think he threw something down and walked away. And I'm sitting there going, uh-oh. But my favorite part was after the game, went up to the coach's office, wait and see how bad it was going to be. And he looked at me and he'd always say, hey, E, called Eric or myself, Eric Lanswick, a physical therapist that helps out every year and has for years. Hey, E, wasn't personal. I'm sorry. How can I make it up? And I looked at him. I like chocolates and roses, buddy. How about those? And he started laughing. And we just gave a big hug. And, you know, that was the relationship we had. We knew as an athletic trainer that I had to make sure that his boys were safe and healthy to play. And he knew that and he respected it, which made my job so much easier. And he gave me pushback and I loved it because I respected him as much as he respected me and teased me for everything I did. It made me feel loved and respected, which not all football coaches do that with their athletic trainers. So I really appreciated that. And Johnny's nodding and Dietrich's laughing. And Coach Carroll, I appreciate you saying, yeah. Because, you know, I really find it hard to think I'm ever going to have another football coach. No disrespect to any coaches I work with now, including Coach Carroll. But you just don't get that often.
No, you know, he had it's funny. I would say generally Jimmy had a long fuse, but in the moment in those really tight games that you're alluding to, I don't know who the player was, but I know I've heard that multiple times from him, whether it was you giving him the news or the referee giving him the news or someone else, that was typically his go-to. He mostly had a very long fuse, you know, the bandana story aside, he gave kids a lot of rope. But then once he got to his limit, he put it on him pretty good and then made sure the kids know, the boys knew why, you know, made sure they understood the behavior that he was expecting to get things fixed.
And that was the key. He wouldn't just yell. It wouldn't just be nonchalant, blah. It would be, okay, now let's move forward. And here's how we can do it.
Yeah. You know, John and Dietrich probably remember pretty well. Our group when those guys played is a mix of loud coaches and soft coaches. And I think Jimmy fell more to the softer side, but it was a good balance of guys that would get on you pretty good versus the guys that were quiet about it. There was harmony to the group because not everything was the same. Like the way I did it with Coach Menares might have been a little bit more vocal than he did it, but he did it just as effectively, just a little differently. And that's the other thing is, you know, not every kid responds exactly the same way. And some kids, some young men, you can get on and ride pretty hard and others don't respond that way. And then he had a really good sense about the young men that he could get on. Like the bandana story, Dietrich says, there's some guys he wouldn't kind of try and show him up of sorts in that moment. But he knew Dietrich was mentally tough and he could take that. And he was also doing it to send a message to the rest of the team. Don't try and push the limits in terms of what I have asked you to do. And the guys see that if he's getting on Dietrich, he can get on anybody. And that's you know, what made him so effective.
Yep.
Yeah, it didn't matter if you were the number one player, although I'm pretty sure Justin Postuma would argue who the number one player on that team was, not Dietrich Riley, but probably Potts. That would be entertaining to watch, actually, that conversation. But it didn't matter if you were number one, number two, or number 20. He treated you with the respect that every person deserved. And I think he really lived, when it came down to that, the golden rule. And it was really fantastic from a medical standpoint to see him with, in your case, both your sons, both Pat Carroll, who we call Crunch, and Johnny, and just the interaction, which had to have been, as a parent, so it had to feel like a blessing to you to have a coach that actually cared in that way for your sons.
Oh yeah, no doubt. These guys both mentioned father figure, and John and Crunch are blessed with number one dad, but they got a number two dad with Coach Bonds, and he became more than a dad to them. I mean, as they grew older, they became his friend, and you know, it wasn't the kind of the father-son relationship. As these guys got into college and beyond, it became more of a kind of mutual adult sort of thing. But yeah, it was, every parent should be lucky to have their son or daughter play for a coach with the attributes and the personality and the kind of the makeup of what Jimmy was all about. To a man, wherever I went with him, the guy was beloved, and I'll forever be grateful about my time watching Coach Bonds coach my boys. It was something special. And, you know, I think of it quite often, especially when I'm there routinely and look at that big Jim Bonds stadium scoreboard and, you know, just reminisce about time on that field. It's wonderful.
It really is. It's so fantastic. I mean, I look up at that name and know what was built on that field because of him. I was blessed to meet you, all three of you, and interact with all three of you and develop relationships with all three of you because of him. Dietrich got to move on to UCLA and play a high level sport because of the tutelage of Coach Bonds. It's not just the attributes. I mean, let's think of how many people, and we all know people that had the skill, but the coach brought out the discipline in the athlete and mentored him and tutored him and made, I shouldn't say made, helped him along in becoming who he could be. I mean, D, no longer playing football, but I would presume that you carry some of those attributes you learned from him into your real estate moguling empire that you're working on now, right?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And also, when I had the opportunity to, you know, do some coaching and help out with kids and being involved in the community, just being able to emulate the things that I learned from Coach Bonds and Coach Carroll, Coach Menard's, our whole staff, just seeing the chemistry that they had and how to go about it. So when I was able to work with kids and be able to, you know, assist and stuff, I wanted to create that same experience, because that was the blueprint. That was what I knew. So I had to follow that because that was my upbringing. So I wanted to kind of take that, implement some stuff that I may have learned for the next level, but being able to like have that upbringing, I didn't take it for granted, because I would say I was very lucky and fortunate. I'm sure, you know, John could say the same thing, because we were spoiled. We had, honestly, it was an incredible experience, honestly. And just being able to have that selflessness, but also being able to build that trustworthiness amongst your peers also, and being able to like create a fun, loving atmosphere. And that's what Coach Bonds was able to do when I was, you know, obviously in the workspace, but also in sports and things like that, in life in general. I want to, you know, carry on those same traits.
John, I'd really like to hear your perspective to that too, how you've been able to carry on what you learned from Coach Jim Bonds to what you're doing in today's world.
Yeah, I mean, I think what everything that Dietrich said, he hit it on the head. I think that it's the qualities that you learn at that program, not only from Coach Bond, but from the staff, it's huge. It's huge when you're able to go out there in the world and have a job. And I think one of the most important things too is teaching you how to work hard. I think that that's missing from today's society a lot. And that is one thing that's helped me in my current job that I'm working at, is I know how to work hard and I know how to get work done, which has helped me so much. Not only in college too, with, you know, exams and studying like that too, but the post life of having a job every day and then also being able to go to the gym and get all those things done too. I can't put it into words how important really St. Francis was for me. All the qualities that Dietrich listed was spot on, and it's just so important, I think, you know, in life, hopefully that all kids growing up are able to have that same kind of fortunate ability to go to a program like St. Francis and learn under a coach like Coach Bonds.
Yeah, that's you guys just nailed it. I mean, really, He was, and I keep hearing some words come up that I just want to highlight: trust, fun, love, respect. Love your comment about working hard and getting the work done, which is something it is a little harder to see nowadays. We don't see it as much, but when you do, it in any sport, it kind of fosters my memories and pulls me back to when he was with us and he was on that sideline, holler and go for two, or the other coach is looking at him. He used to go and, should we punt? Should we go for it? Should we punt? And the coach is yelling, punt, punt, punt. He's like, no, I'm thinking we're going for it. And just the sheer joy that we all had working with him. And I'll be honest, I know a lot of athletic trainers who can't say that about a football coach. Pat, as much hell as we give each other off and on throughout the year, I love working with you. I love working with all the staff. Just some great people. And I was fortunate enough to meet y'all because of Jimmy. And I, just like you, I can't tell you how often I've been out in the middle of nowhere on a camping trip, and I happen to wear a St. Francis shirt, and they go, wait a minute, St. Francis up north California or down south? And I go, down Pasadena. Yep. You know Coach Bonds? Oh my God, you got to be kidding me. I'm out here in Mammoth camping in the middle of nothing, and you're asking me about Jimmy. I mean, Pat, you've known him forever. That's got to happen all the bloody time still.
Yeah, I got it last week. I was
you're kidding.
Yeah, I was wearing my St. Francis practice gear on my way to practice. I stopped off for something, and the guy asked, says, that the St. Francis where Coach Bonds was? And I said, it is. And he says, I didn't really know him, but I respected him from afar. I'm sure you miss him a lot. And I said, well, I miss him. The school misses him. But yeah, routinely I'll get the comment about Jim. And I get it a lot about St. Francis too. You know, St. Francis is, you're lucky, Eli, you work there full time. It's a wonderful place that teaches boys about discipline and determination and getting stuff done. And Jimmy embodied that certainly from the football standpoint.
Yeah, he did. He really did, which made going to work so much fun. I can't argue. I'm very fortunate. My wife reminds me that every year, that it must be nice to go to work and like your job. And I remind her Friday nights are a little different every week, but honey, I generally do. But yeah, he made it enjoyable. And even on those years where we didn't have the win-loss percentages that we had hoped for. I mean, I can think of a couple years that we went 4-6. And we got to the playoffs and still battled. Everybody knew he was going to develop those young boys into young men, whether it was on the field or not, and just made it enjoyable to watch.
No doubt. He played the hand he was dealt and work to make sure that we knew as best we can to execute and play with great effort and energy and play smart. It's kind of the hallmark at St. Francis, but he never lost sight of have fun. And he embodied fun with, you know, as best as possible for the kids at practice, but certainly with the coaches, he liked to have fun, and he had his serious moments too.
I've seen a serious moment once or twice. Yeah.
But I think that's why all the men who coached with Jimmy over the years have such great respect for him, is he built such a good rapport, and he just treated everyone with great kindness and respect. And that's all you can ask for in life, right? When you meet people, and no judging, just, you know, Jimmy was pure as can be. And that's why so many people, you know, loved and adored him. And, you know, when he had that funeral during COVID, kind of in the heart of COVID, it was packed with standing room only in the overflow room. And it wasn't just St. Francis folks. It was folks from all over who knew Jimmy so well and loved Jimmy.
Yeah, I'll admit it. I was in charge of COVID, and as you guys well know, and there was no way on God's green earth I was missing that. The place. Back then, they probably called it a super spreader situation, which was horrible. The whole situation was horrible. To be there for Jimmy in the middle of that, there was just no way we couldn't go. He meant that much to, like you said, so many people. They had literally overflow open up so people could stand outside and be there because he was just
beloved.
Yeah, that's it.
It was impressive.
It really was. Gabe, I know you've got some little stories you'd like to share. Please feel free right now if you'd like to say something about one of your fonder memories or better stories. And remember, we're trying to keep it PG or PG-13, right, Pat?
Yes.
Well, there one that really comes in the forefront. There was his Eaton shirt, which was a God, I think I had the same kind of shirt. It was
Pat's
Hobie.
Nodding and laughing.
It was a white Hobie, and I owned that shirt when I was a kid. It was like a white Hobie, and when it was first purchased, it had beach with an ocean and a sailboat and a sunset, and said Hobie. And I'll never forget, it was after one of our games. We were at St. Francis. Coaches were up top. We were watching film and having some tacos and some burgers. Trish walks in, and I hear, and my back's turned. I'm in my little cubby, you know, cutting up film so you guys can see what happened. And all of a sudden I hear, "Jimmy, what are you wearing?" And I turn, and there's Trish and there's Jimmy. He leans back, and I didn't even know. He had the, it was like he was wearing a nylon. It was like a cat suit. Seriously, you could see through it. Everything was showing. And she's like, what is that? I go, "Babe, it's my Eaton shirt." She's like, "I thought you got rid of that." He's like, "Yeah, I brought it here." Yeah, and it's like, I've had it for years. I'm not going to get rid of it. It's my Eaton shirt, you know. And I love that guy. And going back to what Pat said earlier about making sure all the players are ready, we had played. Oh my gosh, I can't remember. It wasn't Downey. It was some team in Los Angeles. Their colors were black and yellow.
That really narrows it down.
I know. Yep. I'm sorry. They ran like a single wing. They had four plays, and they had horses. They just
Dominguez.
Yes, it was the Dons. They ran like four plays. That's all they ran, and I remember after the game, I think it was Gibbo. We're walking to the bus, and afterwards we didn't win, but it was close and it was competitive. And Gibbo said, "Man, what we could do with some of those horses." And, you know, without missing a beat, not missing a stride, they're walking shoulder to shoulder. Jimmy says, "Yeah, but I'd take our horses any day of the week because we can do so many things." You know, and years later, after the Sarah game, I think it was Thanksgiving weekend when we had them, we were so close, and it was just magical. And I'm up top on the lid at St. Francis, and I'm outside looking at the field. It's like maybe 2 or 3 in the morning. None of us went home, and I went, "Man, Jimmy, how can you do this? We get so close so many times. Have you ever thought?" And he just cut me off, went, "You know, Gaber," and I love that nickname, and my wife still uses it. "If I wanted to win every single game, I'd go to Hart, or I'd go to some other school where players would just come and they could just be whatever they wanted. They'd come, they play football, they transfer out. There would be no focus on the player. You know, they wouldn't care. The school wouldn't care about grades or anything like that. You know, I could win everything." He's like, "But I'm happy here. I get to have my program. I get to make a difference. I get to make these kids into men." And I loved that. Oh my gosh. I would have run through a wall for him, you know. And last Jimmy story, I'm sorry.
Making up for lost time. I get it. Okay.
Well, you know, I came into the coaching office one day. Practice had already gone. I was just coming in during the week. to pick up my laptop so I can cut film at home. And the place was pristine. I mean, Jimmy's desk was spotless. I went down to the practice field. Jim, somebody broke into the coaching office. They stole everything. It's like, what? Yeah. All that crap on your desk, it's gone. He got so mad. Yeah, Tom told me I had to clean it today. They had people coming over. I spent hours on it. Thanks, Gabe.
Hours? No, that would have been probably a day's worth of work to clean that desk.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man, that desk was legendary.
He had the overflow next to it, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, he was a unique young man who left us too soon.
Yep.
Period. He affected all of us in a positive way. One of the comments that one of the people on staff at St. Francis said after his funeral. Going to try and get through this. His legacy lives on in countless number of lives that he transformed through and beyond the game of football. And that's true. Damn, coach. So, I'm going to have one more drink real quick. You can cut that out if you want, Gabe.
No, I poured mine.
Yeah.
I'm good. I have to have one for him.
The funny thing is, guys, we've already been together an hour. And it was wonderful because Gabe was gone for most of it. So it was
about, magical.
It was magical. Oh. It's just like being around the holidays when he's gone out of the room. It's great.
See, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk on a separate Zoom.
And you're just going to edit myself in. See, that's totally him. I see that all the time. But... You know, it's late. I don't want to sit here and take too much of your time. We've talked about Coach Jim Bonds quite a bit. Obviously, we all love him. I'd love to give everybody one last moment. If there's anything else you'd like to say, please feel free. So, Johnny, if you'd like to say anything, please go right ahead.
No, I just say everything that we've talked about here. I think he was just one of a kind person. I mean, like my dad said, it's just an absolute kind soul. There's a reason why it's been brought up multiple times tonight. There's a reason why all these players come back to St. Francis. And I mean, it's crazy to see the number of people that come back, and it's because of him and the staff that he built and the program that he built. And I still have friends, and I'm sure Dietrich still does, that still talk about those days. Those are special, special days. And you know, you almost give anything to go back and relive one of those days, just because that's how amazing it was. And that's what a good coach does. You know, I miss him, but it sucks.
Yeah. D, please.
Yeah, I'm going to just leave it at this one. As he would continuously harp on it. It is amazing how much can be accomplished if no one cares who gets the credit.
And oh, God. I love that quote. I loved it when he would say that.
So profound. It's so profound. And you know, just the layers to that and what it really means, and how everyone that stepped on that field, for him to always bring that up, for all of us to really, we would take that on, and we would be prideful on that, and we would really try to embody that consistently. So that's one thing still to this day, like I said, I will always keep that close to me. He was one of one.
Gabe, anything you'd like to say?
Wow. Before I say anything more about Jimmy, I want to thank my wife, Vicky, who, when we started this podcast, said, you should do an episode on Jimmy. And I was reluctant to. And then the more I thought about it, the more it was just, how could we not, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, she's amazing. And for Jim, it was just, again, I said in the beginning, I didn't know what a good coach was until I met him. until I experienced Jim, his staff, what he did, what he was about, what he brought to the table, and how he made everyone around him, from the coaches to the players to the ball boys to the support staff, be better. And it was, I loved it. It was a little football nirvana. And I will never forget my experience at St. Francis and La Cunada, ever. I loved every moment of it.
Pat?
You know, Eli, I was lucky enough to speak at Jim's service.
I loved your.
I think is it 4 years this year?
Yeah, it is.
October 28th. That's my wife's birthday. Interestingly, he died on my wife's birthday. He was really close with Liz, too. And that was a wonderful part of the relationship we had. But I occasionally read what I wrote about him because it makes me feel better in times like this. But I just want to read you the last couple of sentences of what I shared with the group that day. Post his death, I said, now we are all left with the inspiration and joyful love he shared, along with many wonderful memories and, of course, his infectious laugh. We love you, Coach. Thanks for including us on part of your journey. And that's how I think about Jimmy. It was way too short, but I wouldn't trade the 20 years or so that I had and part of his journey in life. It was one of a kind.
That's well said. And I'd like to, again, thank Trish and Junior and Katie for sharing him with us. They were, He was a gift. It was a package deal with all of them, and it was love. So on that note, Pat, wonderful. Thank you so much for ending on that comment, because it really brought it all into one. And Johnny and Dietrich and Gabe, thanks for being part of this. We truly appreciate you guys as individuals, as people, football players, coaches, friends, colleagues. So thank you so much for being on Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. I hope you guys can have a great night. And I think we'll all be thinking about Jimmy a little later. So have one on me, please, and think about him.
Thanks, Eli. Right.
Have a nice one, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a good one. Good night.
Sir.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Halleck. It is produced by Gabriel Halleck. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Halleck Consulting, LLC.